Thank you, Ted. It's a pleasure to be here to share today. And I want to begin just a little bit by adding one more advertisement before I get into the presentation. And that's for those of you in the Midwest that are interested in further developments and what's going to happen at the state level in soil health work, is that Iowa State University, along with the ARS and other sponsors, industry, that are going to have a soil health conference on February 2nd and 3rd of 2016 in Ames. And for more information about that, go to the website, then register, just register, .extension.iastate.edu, and you can find more information about that. So as we begin today on the topic of the Soil Management Assessment Framework as a potential tool for soil quality assessment, I'm going to talk with you a little bit about, real quickly, and I want to emphasize that since this is being recorded, the early slides especially, we're going to fly through quite rapidly, as this audience understands what it is, soil quality and soil health, and why humankind should be concerned. Then we'll get into the framework per se, how it works, some of the examples of where we've used the SMAF analysis. Then of most importance, and something I hope we can come out of this discussion this afternoon in Auditorium 2, will be opportunities for SMAF improvement. It's in its infancy now, and then we'll wrap up with some summary and conclusions. Soil quality and soil health have been both used interchangeably throughout the years. You can read what's on here. What I normally say to my audience is the difference between soil health and soil quality is that soil health is what a farmer can feel through the boots, soles of his boots as he walks across the field. Soil quality is what soil scientists reluctantly tolerated. You can go into a lot more of the details here from the slides, and if you haven't had a chance to peruse that, I encourage that. Again, it's being recorded. You can go back and grab it if you need the words there. Likewise, soil health instead of soil quality, it emphasizes the living things. I like Bruce's analogy there from Jerry of feeding the two elephants. That's pretty good. I may have to steal that one from Jerry also. Viewing soil as a living ecosystem is the shift in perception that we're now undergoing. It's not an inert medium, but rather teeming with billions of microbes. And it has to be managed as an ecosystem with multiple soil functions. Why? Well, soil resources are crucial for sustaining human civilization. Well established. Bruce did a wonderful job on that. And then sustainability means it has to be economically viable, environmentally sound, and socially acceptable. We have to have all three legs of the stool there to make it move forward in our assessments of soil health. Obviously, concern for soil resources is not a new concept, and in fact, Danny Hillel in his book, Out of the Earth, Civilization and the Life of the Soil, had this paragraph in there, which I really, really like, because it's over 2,500 years ago that Plato had Critias read this to the public. We, as humankind, have not been caring for our resources for far too long, and we need to put more emphasis on taking care of the soil because, like he says, hills that were once covered with forests and produced abundant pasture now produce only food for bees. Land that was enriched by yearly rains, which were not lost, as they are now by flowing from the bare land into the sea. Abandoned shrines and spots where formerly there were springs attest to the description that this is true. I think we know all too well, and this is one of the things I had some discussions last night, the National Lab for Ag and Environment, initially known as the Soil Tilth Lab. We've been there 27 years. I hate to admit it, but the hilltops across the Midwest are getting whiter. We've got a problem. We need to address it. We need to make change. And that's really the question. Are we willing? Are we ready to make the change? I got the Dust Bowl slides there on the upper right. But I got some wind blowing here that's very common even today. The erosion, the hilltops, the sediment, the rip, stream bank erosions. We have got to change. I think we are willing, though, because we now are seeing the soil health division, the emphasis in the societies that we're here today, the soil renaissance movement, the soil health partnership, and the new Institute for the Advancement of Soil Health that Bill will be talking about toward the end of this symposium. I think we have finally come around. Maybe it's only taken us 2,500 years, but we're ready to do something about it. So, what is the SMAF, the topic of my presentation? SMAF is actually just an acronym that stands for the Soil Management Assessment Framework. It's not a model. Very important to understand SMAF is not a model, because models sort of take on a connotation of this is the way it should be. What SMAF is a framework. And that's very subtle but very important, because the frameworks are highly adaptable to the local situation. SMAF does require measured or expert opinion data, either one, but it does take data to work, and that data is interpreted using scoring curves. The data and the scoring curves should reflect the performance of one or more of the critical soil functions, the actions, the things we ask our soil resources to do. Some of the key ones are, of course, sustaining biological productivity, storing and cycling nutrients, regulating and partitioning water, filtering and buffering, providing the habitat for those two elephants. And from an engineer's perspective, soils also have roles as an engineering medium. That means that soil health, when emphasizing these different functions, will have different critical indicators depending on which one we're using the focal point for our assessment. We in Soil, Crop, and Agronomy societies tend to focus mostly on the biological productivity or the storing and functions, but if I were talking with a civil engineering group, it would be over there toward the engineering applications. Doesn't mean that the framework can't be used for those. It just has to be tweaked according to the situation and the need. Factors influencing those soil functions. Again, as Bruce pointed out, we got those basic inherent soil factors: climate, topography, parent material, vegetation, and time. And those are exceedingly well reflected in the original NRCS land capability classes. Those are the parts of the soil system that we really, really can't change. You can't really change those inherent ones. But then we also have the dynamic factors. And those are the ones that reflect the soil status and condition and the current management decisions, current and past land use history, and of course provide the tie to sustainability. Each one of those functions has indicators, and those indicators, as pointed out by John Duran and Tim Parkin during the early phases of soil quality, soil health research, need to correlate well with ecosystem functions. Soil health has to function as a system within the ecosystem. It has to integrate the soil physical, the chemical, and biological properties and processes. It has to be accessible to many users. We've come a long way since 1996 when this was written, now with the emphasis on big data and pulling together information. And I think this is going to be a direction that's going to really help advance soil health and get to the point that Bruce was saying about merging it with policy. Those indicators have to be sensitive to management, to climate, and ideally components of existing databases so that they are relatively available to everybody to advance that. The SMAP began to evolve really in 1989 when we moved into the National Soil Tilth Lab. It took 30 years for that facility to move from authorization when Neil Smith was a freshman congressman in 1959 to reality and moving into it in 1989 when he was in his last term as an Iowa congressman. Another part in the program that helped formulate the beginning steps of SMAF was the work with the sustainable agriculture community. In the lower left is Richard Thompson. Some of the early work that we did was on his farm and an adjacent conventionally managed corn-soybean rotation with an assessment that looked at the profile and all of the factors. And basically, from a sustainable ag perspective, concluded we had two different ways of managing our land. Both of them were doing a good job. We had good stewards of the conventional management. There wasn't any problem with what they were doing in their rotation. There were differences, but they were both functioning well. And it also evolved by working with grazing systems, in this case Stover grazing, but we also have it with other pastures. The real jump in SMAF came when an early team of scientists from the lab went over to southwest Wisconsin and picked up on a study that Art Peterson and others had initiated at the Lancaster station there after the first energy crisis, looking at Stover harvest. Well, that was of interest to me because that's where I began my career with the ARS, was on sustainable Stover harvest after the first energy crisis. And we went over there with a crash team, a SWAT team almost, you might say. We looked at earthworms, we looked at aggregates, we looked at respiration, we looked at all of the different parameters. And we began to think about and develop scoring curves and how we were going to interpret that. And when we went over there, we didn't know anything about soil health or soil quality. We were doing soil assessments and that, wrote up the first paper, and then John challenged me, can't we do something more? And that's where we began to put the scoring curve idea together based on some of the ecology and some of the systems engineering literature. This slide, again, it'll be out there for you to go back if you want to peruse a timeline of where SMAF came in. We're not new. There are a lot of things people discuss, the effect of humans on soil formation and other effects, you know, pre-1970. The one of the first ones that actually talked about and used the word soil quality were Workington and Flesher about intensive agriculture in Japan. Bill Larson and Fran Pierce, some of the early 90s there, the National Research Council on the Soil and Water Quality, an agenda for agriculture where they brought the two together. Some of the first publications there on the what soil health and soil quality were, the articles in Soil and Tillage Research. Canada at that time jumped way ahead of us. But they, you know, we caught up with SSSA and have moved forward into the use of SMAF and a number of things with the SEEP work and the assessments there. And most recently, I've been applying a lot of the principles to the sustainable bioenergy production, and now we're seeing the creation of soil health partnership, soil renaissance, etc. SMAF has been used at the landscape scale as well as at the plot scale and the field scale, and the lower right-hand corner there is a new project that we have a large group of people that's just been awarded from the Department of Energy to look at soil health as part of the supply sheds for bioenergy feedstock production. We'll be going into those areas, working with producers, looking at their return on investment as the starting point, taking those areas where they're not doing well on current crops, putting in perennials because we now have another use for it, and then looking at soil health as an assessment tool. What does the SMAF provide? It really is an indication of where we are headed. Some of the early literature discussions, you'll see lots of arguments and lots of debates about, well, what do I use as a baseline? Do I go to a cemetery? Do I go to a fence row? Do I go, you know, where for a baseline? My response is it doesn't matter. You can't go back in time. You are where you are today, so you set your baseline where you are today in the field you are in today, and then we move forward with our protocols for soil health assessment, and we see where we are going. Are we at least at a bare minimum sustaining the resource where we're at? Hopefully, as we got a lot of opportunity for improvement to meet those productivity needs, we'll be a grading through our improved management practices. And heaven help us if we're on the wrong trajectory down. How does the SMAF work? Well, there have been a number of, we've been at this since the mid-1990s, and some of the, developing a SMAF framework. We've had some attempts to put together Java versions and fairly sophisticated computer attempts to integrate these curves and these ideas. Most of them have not worked very well. So Diane and myself and the other people that have used this map mostly have really resorted to still maintaining an Excel spreadsheet approach to it. I mean, obviously it can be improved, but we have, as of 2014, version 6 there, the Excel spreadsheet that currently has scoring curves in it for 14 potential soil quality indicators. Some of them we have, you know, realistically decided need to be abandoned. They were early ideas and that no longer needed. And realistically, in the research we've done, 5 to 10 is sufficient for a reasonable soil health assessment. The key, however, is to represent critical functions and of associated with the physical, chemical, and biological attributes of the soil. If we look at the spreadsheet, you can pull it up, and again, it's available through, I think it's even on the website at some time, Diane, I'm not sure, and there, the beginning of it, you'll see a bunch of user-defined columns that allow you to say where you're at, and then you have certain factors in there, and this is the key to the SMAF curves there. It's built on organic matter class and texture and mineralogy, climate, sampling time, region, the crop, the slope, the method of phosphorus and EC analyses, weathering class. And those factors are adjusted according to the scoring curves. And when you pull it up, you can see how those curves are built. It's very visible, very transparent. And then the data that you is then entered and interpreted through those particular curves. There's three types of scoring curves, basically, that are built into the SMAF. There is the more is better one here, which basically something like soil organic matter, generally speaking, would have a more is better relationship. However, as was pointed out by the people in forestry one time, if you get too much organic matter and you get hydrophobicity, you can come back down on it. So maybe midpoint optimum is going to be one for most. Bulk density, on the other hand, less is better in that case. You want although if you get too low on bulk density, you don't get a seed bed. So again, you can argue that probably midpoint optimum is the where you can define for almost every indicator. This was a very important slide early in the development of the SMAF. We were dealing with people in the Central Valley of California. Susan Andrews, remiss in not acknowledging Susan earlier. She was a postdoc with me. She then went on with NRCS and is still with NRCS doing a number of doing work in soil health and other aspects. We were working together with producers and extension people and in California, and they were very, very concerned, and a lot of the writing was, we're trying to turn the entire United States into a malocentric approach or malosols. We said, no, we're not trying to do that. What we're trying to show you is that you do have scoring curves, and that for a malosol, you know, and for an altosol, it's the same shape. But if you had 2% organic matter in an altosol in southeastern U.S. and Georgia, that you had a fully functioning soil, and maybe if you're growing cotton, 2% organic matter might be too much in terms of nitrogen lease, and you may get rank cotton. So you don't want it anymore. But if you only have 2% organic matter in a malosol, you're down here with a fairly degraded situation. Same scoring curve shape, but tailored based on those factors that I shared with you to be used for the different parts of the nation. SMAP functions as a framework. You have those management goals, those functions. Is it productivity? Is it engineering? Is it waste remediation? Those management goals, you establish critical soil functions to achieve those goals. So each of those soil functions has key indicators that follow into those. That's what we mean when we talk about a minimum data set. The minimum data set then, each of those indicators has to be scored through those scoring functions, and you can do one of two things. You can stop at this point and you can say, okay, my aggregation is scoring well, but my pH is way out of whack. My EC is good. My potassium is out of whack. Or you can take these scores are 0 to 1 unitless values, and this was the unique part when we began to conceptualize and build a SMAF. is that the question I had when we were doing the early work was, how do I compare aggregates and earthworms and nutrient levels and all of this stuff when they're so disparate with chemical, physical, and biological? Well, it came for me through systems engineering, for Susan through her ecology training, that you put it in a scoring function. You make them unitless, and then you've got 0 to 1 numbers to add up, and you can divide through however many indicators you have here, and you can get a score, and you multiply by 100, you got a percent functioning. That's how the SMAP basically functions with this, and why it's a framework and why it moves that way. Soil quality and water quality, you can apply them with their linkage, because you're looking at how the soil is functioning in terms of the what's coming through the tile lines, what's going in runoff, how irrigation is, what's in the stream water quality. Or as like I said, we're now going to apply it to the sustainable feedstock production. And here we kind of outline what's needed then for an assessment. Well, basically, to get started, you need basic soil test information, and then organic carbon, total nitrogen, EC bulk density, and then at least some of the other recommended analyses here of aggregate stability, microbial biomass, carbon, soil enzymes, POM, some of the secondary ones. The whole idea here is to get representation of physical, chemical, and biological properties and processes. Obviously, supplemental information such as the compaction assessments, crusting, infiltration, leaching, runoff, water holding capacity, soil strength. The more information you have, the more data you have, the better assessment you can make. And this is why, as we build data sets and databases to draw from, we can use that framework to add in more and more, because you just keep adding the indicators. We've applied this math. One of the biggest ones was to the Cropland Conservation Effects Assessment Project, the CEAP project. The ARS had 14 watersheds where we had been doing research. We went in and did assessments on those. Each of the locations had a say in what was the critical question they were trying to ask. Diane and I shared a lot of the analyses through my lab, and when she was with the ARS at the National Soil Erosion Research Laboratory. We've got the data analyzed. We've got about half of the papers out now, or maybe a third. The others are in press. There's several posters going on at this meeting with people that are still working up the data. But that was a big one that has been fairly successful. As I said, we've been quantifying stover harvest impacts with it. And the most exciting is the fact that actually SMAF took off globally, almost stronger than here in the United States. I see a lot of papers from South America, from Spain, Africa, China, Australia, where they've used the SMAF. In fact, this morning I was reviewing a dissertation from a student in Spain that used it to look at how does the soil change when you introduce irrigation, which is a major policy change in Northwest Spain there. They've expanded irrigation. And I had an early student that did soil health assessments under non-irrigated conditions. They installed irrigation and went in. I currently have two visiting scientists from Brazil with me working on soil health, and they'll have some posters today and tomorrow. You can look and see what they've been doing, some exciting work. With regard to the SEEP sites, just to give you an idea, we looked at cotton sites in Oklahoma, pastures, native pastures, wheat, forest and row crops, and forage down in Georgia, an organic a conversion site in New Hampshire. We went to Puerto Rico with this, with one of the special project, NRCS special projects watersheds. Work in chop tank there for the an area along the Chesapeake Bay, out of St. Joseph's River Basin in Indiana. We got a study in Missouri and Idaho. So we've tested this in a number of areas, and it's working. The system, the SMAP assessment is working. It's giving back logical information. This just gives you a glimpse on some of those watersheds when you have a maximum minimum values there of where the soil is functioning. And now to move in, as I said this afternoon, we'll try to talk a little bit about what's needed for further development. First to admit, those scoring curves probably need a rigorous scientific review with additional data they've functioned awfully well, but it can always improve. We need to develop scoring curves for horizons deeper than the near surface for some more deeper profile interpretation. More streamlined factor class and data entry mechanisms would be wonderful. And obviously the possible incorporation of other techniques such as the visual evaluation of soil structure or the VES protocol, that's a good on-farm tool, but it's looking very much in the posters that Mauricio and Cassio have at this meeting as a tool and a way to go to improve SMAF. Basically, just a quick glance, this is what VES gives you. It gives you different soil quality assessments with aggregation, rooting, the structure, all of those kind of things. And again, see the posters for more follow-up on that. We've also used the SMAF to look at land use change effects in Brazil in the transition from Cerrado to pasture, which then often was degraded and overgrazed, and then into sugarcane production, which resulted initially in some improvements in soil quality until the compaction of the heavy equipment got to be too much. Summary, the next steps are to develop and implement a soil health assessment framework is crucial for global soil security and improved soil management decisions. SMAF needs a champion to promote further development. Perhaps it can be the Soil Health Division or the Soil Renaissance Project, the Partnership, or the Institute. Soil health assessment should be definitely viewed as a value-added opportunity for soil test laboratories and consulting services. The private sector, the government, and NGOs all need to be involved with using a tool such as this. And it doesn't matter if it gets changed, gets rebuilt. It's the approach that needs to be done. Because our ultimate goal that we must achieve, we have no choice to achieve, is to have healthy soils, healthy landscapes, and thus vibrant economies. With that, Ted, do I have time for a question?
We have time for one brief question before we move on. In the back.
Colder? We've done the assessment for the sustainable feedstock production. We've got sites in Minnesota, Morris, up in Brookings. ARS has sites up in Mandan and North Dakota. We've had interchange with the Canadians.